Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sheila Shoiga, and welcome to Ready to Be Real Conversations, the podcast series where I chat to people of all walks of life. Some names you'll recognise, others you might not, but my hope is that these conversations will at times inspire, challenge, educate, comfort, or simply entertain you. This week, I speak to former model and media personality, Holly Carpenter.
So I kind of actually think that this has taught me that it's who you surround yourself with is so important.
Yeah.
And I think I relied on that more because I didn't have my parents to lean on. So I was like, oh no, I really have to be careful who I'm around, because if I'm with someone who makes me anxious, or if I have a friend that's kind of always kind of getting sly digs in, or you know, when you're with people you feel like you have to watch what you're saying. So I've probably kept my circle really small, and I'm with people who take me fully as I am, and I can just relax with them and know that they support me and I support them. So I think I just look for quality over quantity with everything now.
Holly lives in Stony Batter in Dublin with her dog Max, and has been in a relationship since October. But over the past 14 months, she's had many ups and downs and has been very honest about her struggles with her mental health and the impact the pandemic had on her overall well-being. She's genuine, sensitive and naturally funny. And in this candid conversation, she talks about the years she spent modelling, competing at the Miss World pageant, taking part in Britain's Next Top Model, and the toll it all took on her. She also talks about the damage of toxic positivity, being separated from her parents for over a year, dating in a pandemic, her newfound love of sea swimming, and how she's not a fan of the five-year plan. Here it is. You strike me as somebody who's a real truth teller. Would I be right in thinking that?
Yeah, I'd never really struggled with saying what I think, I suppose you could say. And I have always felt that there's nothing better than being honest. And I think maybe it's because when I was growing up, my mum and dad always told me not to lie. And I took that very seriously. Yeah. So I think that I always thought lying was really bold. So if I'm asked a question, I just answer it. And like, it has probably gotten me in trouble a bit over the years because maybe there's a bit of a lack of filter. But I think that even when I look back at things going, should I have said that? At least I can say fully that that's what I felt at the time. Because I think it makes me really nervous if I'm talking to someone and I don't know where I stand. That's the kind of thing that makes me anxious. I love when you know that person likes me, that person doesn't like me, whatever. If I'm in a grey area in any aspect of my life, I find
totally
it really
agree.
Uncomfortable. But I think there's definitely been probably parts of my life where I've kind of felt the need to be a bit more reserved or silent, and that's when I've probably struggled the most, because I, you know, when you know you're not being your authentic self, it definitely affects your self-esteem and your confidence, and you just feel a bit on edge. So even if being really open and honest isn't everyone's cup of tea, it sits well with me.
Yeah. Do you struggle with diplomacy?
I think I can be kind of good at warming up to be diplomatic and saying all the things like, look, you know, I'm not being bad and I'm only saying this as a friend, and all of that kind of stuff leads up to it, but then I'll just say it. And it can probably be a lot, but you know, some of my friends will ask me for advice, or they'll be like, well, I know what you would have said if I asked you, you would have told me not to text him, but I did text him and this is what I said. And I'm like, well, you know, I would have said don't do it, or you know, that kind of thing. So they know that they're going to get the answer they might not want to hear. So they'll probably just sometimes do the thing first and then come to me and be like, okay, I did it. I text them again. And I'm like, no. But yeah, I think that would be true. I kind of can try to be diplomatic, but I'm very more to the point. I don't want to dance around things for too long.
Yeah. I just find that with a lot of people that I speak to, they can, if say being a truth teller was on one side of the scale and a people pleaser was on the other, a lot of people seem to fit into the people pleaser mold more than the one that kind of tells it as it is. And I think a lot of us have to work to get to where you're at now. Mm. Was it simply just your upbringing? You think it was just, it was ingrained in you from an early age?
I do think it was, in terms of being outspoken or saying what I feel, I think that was definitely just the environment I was brought up in. My mum's strong woman, like my granny Terry obviously was a very outspoken strong woman as well, so that was not the issue. But I do think I fall under the people pleaser category a little bit, in terms of if I'm invited to things, I feel like I have to say yes. And I think that's something that a lot of people are feeling with the pandemic now, with, you know, the bars and stuff opening again soon and things lifting, and all, everyone's like, do you want to do this, will we have this reservation, will we do this, will we have a picnic, will I have a barbecue? And we're not used to it at the moment. And my friend Nadia was like to me, just remember, you don't have to say yes to everything.
Yeah.
You can just say, do you know what, I can't make it on Friday, but let's meet up next week. And you don't have to give an excuse. I just can't make it on Friday. I'll say, oh, do you know, should I say that, you know, I'm busy doing work, or that I've plans already? I'm trying to get better at not justifying my choices and just saying I can't make it.
Mm. There's an importance in that, isn't there? Being able to say yes, but also being able to say no when it's the right thing for you. And as you said, because I'm just thinking of my own situations where I may have not wanted to do something, and and unfortunately I've probably made up an excuse.
Yeah.
That is, again, not being truthful, but I feel like I had to.
I think it's an Irish thing as well, though, because people were very much like, ah, go on, you will, come along. Like, we're very, we push each other to do stuff, like, you will have a drink, come on, come out. So you kind of do sometimes have to tell a white lie just to get out of things. And I hate doing it, because sometimes it's not enough to say, I just can't make it, because your friends will pry a bit. But yeah, I don't know. I think, I remember I had a counsellor years ago, one of them, and she said to me, every time you say yes to something you don't want to do, you're saying no to Holly.
Yes,
and you're just
brilliant.
Not listening to yourself. And I always am a believer in your gut instinct. And if your gut is saying, you don't want to do that, don't go, but your mouth is saying, yeah, sure, I'll be there, I'll come early and help you set up, I'm like, why did I just say that?
Yeah. And then it will take its toll in the long term.
Yeah.
If you keep denying what you really want.
Exactly. And I find you can build resentments to people a little bit then, because you're like, why are they making me do this? But, you know, you could have said no. So it's funny. I think that's something that I've learned from growing up, like coming closer to 30 now, I'm trying to be wiser with sticking with what I genuinely want to do.
Well, this is one of the reasons why I wanted to ask you on the podcast, because I do think you're wise beyond your years. And I really mean that. Like, honestly, if I had an ounce of your cop on and maturity at your age, I would have been laughing, because I didn't really get there until well into my 30s. Mm. I feel like you're in a really brilliant place. Like, I'm personally really excited for your 30s, because I feel like you're approaching your 30th birthday in October, isn't that right?
Yeah.
And like, you've done a lot of work on yourself by the sound of things. You already have a really good sense of who you are at this stage.
Yeah, I kind of laughed there when you said that I have cop on, because cop on is probably what my dad always tells me. He's like, Holly, would you cop on? And, you know, like, I kind of feel like it's funny when you come to a parent-daughter relationship, because you feel like, you know, you're being told to cop on. But I'm like, I actually do have cop on. So I'm like, no, sorry, Dad, Sheila Shoga said that I have cop on. So you can never say it to me again. But I do like the sound of me being wise. I guess I was kind of, went straight from like being a college student in NCAD to being Miss Ireland.
Yeah.
And that was a leap from, you know, sitting on the ground in the courtyard in NCAD drinking cans and wearing no makeup and being with my friends. And then suddenly you're at the VIP Style Awards. You're kind of amongst all these people you grew up watching on TV, like Westlife and Boyzone will be there. You know, you're getting your photo taken. And I guess that, like, as much as those things don't really matter in the grand scheme of life, it just career-wise, it put me in a position where I suddenly had to cop on.
Mm. Yeah. And like, what were you, 19, 20?
I was 19 when I won Miss Ireland, yeah. So I was 20.
Young, yeah.
I was 20 at Miss World, because it was in November. But yeah, it was just like mad how it all happened.
Yeah. And I would imagine we could probably record a whole podcast on just talking about the Miss World experience and the behind the scenes of, because we've heard as outsiders a lot about these beauty pageants and the amount of work that goes into them, particularly certain countries around the world. It's big business, you know, winning these competitions is a difference between a life of poverty and a complete change of life.
100%. I think that's why, you know, if there was ever a group photo opportunity or something, you'd get an elbow in the ribs almost from some of those girls, because they want to be at the front row. They've changed their outfit for the third time that day. They've got everything ready. And it's just a chance for them, like you said, to get out of the situation they're in. Whereas Irish girls go over there and like, we're lucky where we live, you know, in this country, that we're coming from a safe country, you know, we're there to represent, and we want our families to be proud of us and stuff, but we don't have that pressure. But I think, like, a lot of people think you fly over to Miss World, you do the pageant and you come back, but it's 3 weeks that you're there. And it's constant, like, dress rehearsals, random things. But, like, I always think that if you ever got a chance to spend 3 weeks with one person representing almost every country, like, well, about 110 countries, yeah. Like, so I learned so much about different cultures and just speaking to different girls, and, like, you know, it kind of, in a lot of ways it made me really appreciate our country and you know, the way, even though we've still, I think, a long way to come, but the way women are respected here, and there isn't actually obviously as much pressure, you know, in Ireland to get married and have kids and stuff as some of the other countries. Like, some of the other girls I was speaking to were the same age as me, 20, and they were like, well, I have to find a husband right after this and all this stuff. And I was like, what? Wow.
Was it mad? I mean, I just have this, I suppose, and again, I'm perhaps making an unfair assumption, so apologies if I am, but I would imagine the pressure, because it's fundamentally about you, the aesthetics, how you look.
Of course,
it's all about your outward beauty. It's not all about that, but a huge part of it is, obviously. That must have been unbelievable pressure.
Yeah, I definitely, and I think it depends on how your personality is and how much pressure you put on yourself. But yeah. I definitely put a lot of pressure on myself.
And also, you're so young.
Yeah, and it's not just like how you're posing in a picture in that few seconds. It's at breakfast, your posture, your outfit for breakfast, how much you eat at lunch, the way you carry yourself with the other girls, how popular you are. So it does obviously make you feel like you've been thrown in the deep end. And I remember I didn't even have eyelash extensions, or, you know, I wasn't that advanced with all that. And there were girls with nose jobs, boob jobs, you know, filler and everything, even though it says in the rules you can't have that. And I'm very much like, you do what you want with your face and body. But it was just like, there was girls who were just like built for pageants, and they have been in pageant school since they were 6 years old and they have it nailed. So I think in a way, a part of me understood that it wasn't real. Anytime I got really caught up in it, I was like, this is not real life. You know, most people you meet are not this level of perfection. But then I kind of found my little circle. I was friends with Miss England and Miss Norway. My roommate, it goes alphabetically, so Israel and Ireland were roommates, and Ella had like perfect English and we got on so well, and I follow them all still on Instagram. And so we kind of all know, like, there were certain things we had to do. We'd look at each other and roll our eyes and, you know, practicing the wave and stuff. And I was glad I found a clique that found some of it funny.
Yeah.
You know, so it was kind of nice. I think if I was to ever try and really, really go for it, I think you could probably do long term damage trying to actually keep up to that level. You know, I was glad I was able to have the crack. And I was lucky when Rosanna Davison did it, it was in China. And she was away from her family for so long in China. And obviously, like, it's just completely different over there, so far from home. But when I did it, it was in London. So my mum and dad and my brother and everyone could come and see it.
Okay, great.
So it was nice. It was nice to know that you were that little bit closer, well, a little bit, a lot closer to home.
Yeah. And I think it's important to have a sense of humour, something you absolutely have in abundance. One of the things I've always observed about you is that you have a cracking sense of humour, a really dry wit. Did they get you? Did they get your sense of humour?
Oh, there's definitely a lot of them didn't.
Okay.
Yeah, because I think Irish people, like, you kind of slag each other.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
And, you know, we're very much like, you know, just love the crack. And
yeah,
like,
rip the piss out of each other.
The piss, like, and it's a lot of cultures don't understand that, and they can find it kind of offensive, which I learned. So, yeah, definitely it was interesting. And also, like, I remember Miss Moldova, I think it was so lovely, but her delivery was so, you know, Irish people almost apologize for everything. We're like, sorry, excuse me, do you mind passing me that? Oh, thanks a million. Where she's like, give me that. And like, she's not even being rude. She's just asking me to give her something. Yeah. But like, it's, and I kind of like, I found it really shocking. If someone spoke to me like that here, I think they were just being really rude. Yeah. But they were probably like, why is Miss Ireland apologizing for everything? Yeah. Like, sorry. Do you know, it's funny when you put us all together. I wish someone had done a documentary on it or something just so I could watch it back. Because even when I went to Miss World, I don't even think I had Instagram. It was 2011. So it was very much right before social media really took over. Yeah. So I don't have that many pictures or anything like that. We didn't have Instagram stories then.
Yeah.
So I don't have too many pictures, but I would like to have been able to look at back at it a bit more.
Yeah. What was the pressure like on you personally, though, to I look a certain way?
I think I definitely felt a lot of pressure to lose weight. I think Miss World was more about, in terms of, if you were to say, about being pretty. But it was more when I went on when I was 23 to do Britain's Next Top Model, which was about being a model. So that, to my mind, was about being skinny. So that's when the body image stuff really started for me, because I was like, you know, modeling is about high fashion modeling, you should be thin. So that's probably 23 was when I started to really struggle with it. I think I probably still had a really good metabolism at 20 when I went to Miss World, so I wasn't too worried, but I still was probably hard on myself. But yeah, and I also think as well, I felt like overnight I went from someone who people were like, oh, that's Holly, like she's just, you know, she's in college, she was gas in school, complete messer, she's in art college, la la la, to like, oh, she's Miss Ireland, she must think she's the absolute shit, like the state where it's okay. A bit cringe that she's doing pageants. And like, I suppose when you have that title, people presume that you are up yourself. And so I think I could walk into a room and think, oh, Jesus, everyone in here thinks I'm so into myself. And like, they might not have been thinking that. But it's funny the things that you worry about when you're in a crowd. And I wasn't used to that. So I suppose I was more concerned about my people's perception of me changing. And then also, as I went on, the pressure of kind of starting to try and get thin for Britain's Next Top Model.
Mm. Before we get into that, actually, you've just touched on something there that I think is probably something that, you know, maybe the likes of you and Roseanne and different people who have achieved a lot in their careers in terms of the period of time when they've been modelling or whatever they've been doing, but anything that's been based on how they look. Do we make assumptions? Or I mean, what kind of assumptions have been made about you incorrectly?
Oh God, I'd say there's lots.
So many.
I think it's funny because back then there was the era of like the Irish model and there was all the photo calls. And, you know, some of them were ridiculous, some of them were gas. And we were all actually mostly able to laugh at ourselves and be like, oh my God, I did a photo call the other day and I had to have like an inflatable pineapple. I was standing on Grafton Street, I was scarlet. Like, we'd all laugh at it. But I think the papers were like the Irish models and they were kind of slagging them a bit, which I noticed didn't happen to a lot of men. I think it was like more that they were easy targets, women.
Yeah, you know, funny that, eh?
It's funny, don't get me started. And I was just like, oh, here we go. So it was like, I felt a bit unprotected, I think, like as a model back then, because you didn't really know what jobs you were walking into. And you just felt like, I noticed anytime I saw, you know, anyone who was a man being interviewed or whatever, they'd have someone by their side, they'd control the questions and stuff like that. And I remember being 21 and arriving at a photo call, didn't know what it was for, and they had a rugby kit for me and three journalists. And they asked me like, oh, you know, do you hope Ireland wins at the weekend? And I was like, well, yeah. And I literally just said, yeah, I do. And then I was like, look, I have to go. And then the picture was me wearing a rugby kit going, Holly hopes Ireland wins the match this weekend. And I was just like, oh my God. And all the comments online were like, oh my God, she's so desperate. Look at her wearing the gear, like trying to be a wag and all this. And people just don't actually give you the benefit of a doubt.
No,
that
they don't.
Maybe I didn't have. And now if I arrived at any job and I didn't want to do something, I'd be like, I'm absolutely not doing that. But when you're 21 and you're like, you have to do this, like this. Yeah. You know, so there was times where I was pressured into things and then, you know, or misquoted. That's one thing that drives me mad, if you're misquoted and the comments just tear you apart. Mm. So I've kind of gone on a tangent there, but I think.
No, I hear you.
Yeah, I think I worry that kind of makes me worry that there's a preconception and that people might think you're vain, you're not intelligent, you're stuck up, you don't really have like morals or a real kind of sense of reality, and you know, you just get your nails done and that's all you do all day. So that's kind of what I was worried about, people thought instantly.
So when you did Britain's Next Top Model, I mean, that was huge because the show was massive. Obviously there was the original, the Tyra Banks one in the States, and then it just became this global phenomenon. I mean, even getting into the final, the final, what, 14?
14, yeah.
Yeah, that, I mean, that in itself was a huge achievement.
Oh yeah, thanks. I was delighted because I saw in the credits of one that I was watching, if you want to apply for next year's, and I was like, do you know what, I'm just going to apply. And I didn't tell anyone. And when I went for the interview, they were like, if we pick you for this show, you have to not tell us all because it's pre-recorded and we'll just edit you out. So there was a lot secrecy around it, and like just leaving Dublin to go for a few weeks. I had to make up lies to all my friends and stuff. But I just remember I lost the run of myself before going because I just felt like, you know, when you put so much pressure on something. And I was like training with a personal trainer twice a day. I was drinking black coffee. I was chain smoking. I was taking laxatives. I was doing anything that I thought would literally make the weight fall off me. And I didn't care if it was bad for me, like in that sense.
And you were probably extremely
I was so
slim
thin,
to
yeah.
begin with. Yeah.
And I remember my period stopped and I was like, what the hell? Like, this is really weird. It was about 2 or 3 months. And I went to the doctor and he was like, you're underweight. And I remember, you know, I did not feel like I was underweight. I thought he was lying to me. I was like, my mum was like, Holly, you have body dysmorphia. Yeah. And like, I never got to the stage where I looked visibly ill. And that's one thing I would stress about any sort of like eating disorder or, you know, issues around food is the person doesn't have to be extremely small or extremely large. Yeah. Everyone has their healthy weight and everyone has a weight that their body can keep them at. And for me, I'd reached a point where my body was like, something's up, this isn't right. So, and I remember I was actually so in my head about it that I was like, well, this is kind of handy that I'm not getting my period because I won't be bloated. I won't have to worry about being bloated for any photo shoots. And like, that's okay, the way I was thinking. Yeah. And I look back now and I'm like, that is absolutely mental. So, you know, and then after the show, when it all finished, I came seventh, I think. And I felt like all I wanted to do after it was eat. I was like, I have this time off now, I'm just going to eat. And like, then you're just like eating loads because you're like, you know, you want to binge eat, you know. And then after you do that, you feel guilty. So I definitely fell into this mad kind of cycle. And I think even though there's a lot more awareness around eating now and, you know, eating disorders now, I still think it's something really uncomfortable for women to talk about because you feel like weirdly ashamed of it, do you know, and you shouldn't. So, and I know men get it too. So I think that that was something where back then it wasn't discussed. There weren't really podcasts. There wasn't that kind of self-love wave going on social media. So I felt like probably kind of lonely with it, you know, that way. And I knew there was girls that were definitely struggling with it too, but they, like, a big thing about it would be lying about how much you ate. So they'd be like, oh, you know, last night I just had like Domino's and stuff. And I know they didn't. And I'd be like, oh yeah, like I had, you know, the pancakes for breakfast and I hadn't. Like, it's a really warped kind of thing. Okay, yeah. And it can kind of affect your relationships with your family, because I remember being at Sunday roasts and stuff and I'd be really angry that my mum had made like roast potatoes and cauliflower cheese and all the stuff I love, because I'd have a shoot on the Monday. So I'd be sitting there annoyed that there was all this food around me that I couldn't eat, and it just made me really snappy with my family. And then obviously I felt bad. So it's kind of a really hard situation to understand. And like, it kind of, I felt like if I spoke about it, people would be like, why are you so obsessed with yourself? You know, there's people dying in the world and you're worried about your weight. I felt like, you know, it's not a big enough thing to talk about, but it actually was consuming me. So I think it just took for me to grow up a bit. And then at 24, I was like, I just don't want to model anymore. I could have kept going probably, but I just wasn't enjoying it. It wasn't making me happy. It was getting to the point where I was like, is this always going to be the cycle for me, where I get to a weight, I think I'm going to be happy at this weight, then I'm not happy, then I fluctuate again, and then someone says one thing that triggers me. And you know, like, there, some of the things, like, another thing about modeling I will say is that, like, you're not very well, like I said before, protected in the fact that if you're in a work environment in a lot of companies and your boss says something to you that's out of order, you can, you know, go to the head office, or you can sue, or you can make an issue or a complaint. But the things that are said in those agencies to young girls, you know, you just have to take it. And some of the stuff is really harsh. Like, even if they think you've gone up a size, or if your skin isn't great, like, I'm sure there are lovely model agencies out there, but some of the people I dealt with, I look back now and I'm like, oh my God, you were X years old and you spoke to a 20-year-old girl like that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. So I'm only imagining what it must be like to be on the receiving end of commentary like that. When is it that they don't see models as number one human and young women, young girls? Is it just their objects or things to benefit or make money from?
Exactly. I think if they're kind of probably thinking, if Holly stays as these measurements and her skin stays clear, the more money I make. So there's a lack of compassion I felt at the time, where going, well, maybe there's a reason she's gained a bit of weight, or maybe she's stressed and that's why her skin has broken out.
Yeah.
You know, there was none of that. So I kind of just felt like this sigh of relief when I quit. And I think that now, obviously, I still would do the odd photo shoot when it's with something that I'm talking about. You know, if I'm doing an interview and it's kind of like I have a bit more control and I say I'd love to wear that, I don't think that's me, and I feel like I can be myself. So it's definitely, I think, just from 20 to 24 was a bit of a whirlwind where I was like, what is going on?
Do you know what? I'm really glad that you brought up, you know, because you've really just, we've only just dipped our toe into speaking about disordered eating, but it's something that I've personally been doing a lot of, you know, reading and listening to different experiences about, because I want to learn more, and it's something I want to delve into further on the podcast, because I think it's really important, particularly in the now. I think in this year of isolation and a lot of us being living a hermit life, I'm hearing a lot of stories where there's everything from one end of the spectrum, which is your anorexia, bulimia perhaps, and then people who are binge eating, but it's all born out of a lack of mental balance, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely. And I think whenever I would binge eat, I'm kind of an extremist, I think, sometimes. And I was very much all or nothing when it came to food. And then if I was you know, you're kind of essentially filling a hole. And then if I wasn't doing it with food, I'd do it with alcohol or something like that, or like attention, or, you know, there's something. And then I have to kind of stop myself and go, why am I looking for something? Like, and I think with the pandemic, we were all forced to just sit with ourselves. And like for a lot of people, that's really scary, because sometimes like people would be rushing around and they actually like to be running from A to B to C and just being frantic and going to the gym and going for a night out and meeting people for cocktails. And the next day we're doing it again, and or whatever your buzz is. And when all of our crutches were removed from us and you couldn't rely on your friends, you couldn't go out for drinks, you couldn't go to the gym, I felt like that's when it was like we were forced to do self-discovery, whether you were ready or not.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a brilliant sentence. And some people are terrified about, you know, shining the light inward and as you said, delving into self-discovery, because it's not easy.
No, of course. There's things about yourself you don't want to admit or you don't want to really look into too far.
Absolutely.
And like with regards to people leaning on food potentially during lockdown, then there's the whole, you know, stress of thinking, oh my God, is everyone going to think now when things are lifting that I've let myself go? Or, you know, how, and, you know, there's I think it's sad that it comes, a lot of it comes back to image, but I do think there's definitely more pressure on women. And I think a lot of guys, I'm sure, are feeling it too. But I think there's definitely more pressure on women, of course.
And you've been talking about your own personal experience that in one way might seem extreme to some people listening, you know, the working out, the having the coffee, the taking the laxatives, whatever. Yeah. But I think the majority of us, if we were truly honest, because this is why, since reading and listening to so many different opinions and experiences about disordered eating, I've had a disordered relationship with food myself. Mm-hmm. And I thought before that it was totally grand, totally fine. But as somebody who kind of goes up and down weight for various different reasons, I've realized that sometimes my attitude with food isn't entirely healthy. Mm. And it doesn't mean that it's extreme, but it's enough that it requires probably a little bit of observation and awareness about. And I think if we were all really honest with ourselves, it is probably something that impacts far more people than they realize themselves.
I think so. And I think that sometimes I can have an attitude like, you know, when you go, oh my God, I didn't even eat that much today, by accident. And then I'm like, oh, maybe I could actually try and do the same tomorrow. And I have to stop myself and go, no, you need to have a big dinner because you literally haven't eaten enough today because you're busy. Or, you know, if someone compliments you on your weight, it can almost be triggering, like, God, you look like you've lost weight. And maybe you've lost weight because you're stressed. But then you're like, Jesus, I'm getting all these compliments. And I do think that there's a lot of that. So that's why sometimes it does kind of bother me a little bit when I see people online acting as if they're fully healed from their past eating disorder, because they're like, I used to have these issues with food and now I just, you know, took up the gym and I eat loads and I'm really happy. And I think for me, my acceptance around it is that it's probably something that'll be underlying a little bit there all the time, and maybe sometimes it'll get triggered and I'll have to have self-awareness and kind of like look at it and deal with it, because I just don't think that you can be so fascinated and obsessed by something for years and then just be healed. I think that sometimes Instagram kind of glamorizes the recovery of eating disorders because they make it look like it's all you have to do is start eating again and go to the gym and love yourself and jump in the sea. And I'm like, that's not going to do it for me anyway. And if there are people who are fully healed, that's great, but I just think it's something that you're, for me, I'm better off accepting that it could kind of come up again,
to be more aware of it.
And that makes me less afraid of it, because it makes me feel like I'm in control.
That makes sense. So that if there is something that does trigger you, you could probably quicker at saying, OK, well, I know what I need to do to mind myself, because I can see that if I go down that road, it'll be a slippery slope.
Yeah,
that is probably healthier and more proactive, I would imagine, than assuming that you're grand.
Yeah, because that's when you can get blindsided, I think.
Yeah. Makes total sense. So this past, I can't even say year, because it's more than a year. What is it? 14, 15 months has been absolutely mental. And
I know,
none of us, crazy. As we were saying before we started recording the podcast, if we had known, you were saying, like, you know, last St. Patrick's Day that we didn't have Paddy's Day parade, and if we were told then that we wouldn't have one a year later, what that would have done to us, I don't think any of us would have been able to handle it. But you have gone through, and I hate using the term because it's so overused, but a journey. You've got
through a spiritual journey.
You have. But you have, like, following you as an outsider, just simply following your stories, which I know is only a part, a glimpse, rather than the full picture into someone's life. But also hearing from you over the past year, it sounds like you've really embraced being completely real and showing that it's not always sunshine and flowers every single day.
Yeah.
And that, you know, you've had a challenging time with it, which I think is really refreshing to hear, because truthfully, it's probably been like that for a lot of people or most people.
Yeah, I think it was so up and down for everyone. And I think the timeline of the way it happened for me, and I always kind of, I don't know what it is about me, I feel bad talking about anything that I found hard, because then I go, no, Jesus, there's probably people listening and they are a single mom and it was way harder for them.
But look, it's all relative.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I remember I went to London and the trip I was in London was a complete mess and I missed my flight home, and then there was no other flights. I had to stay in a Hilton on my own, and then I went out with my cousin, missed my flight, came home, and I was on my phone and my mum said, you know, sit down, your dad has something to say to you. And then my dad told me, and now he's fine, he's okay now, but he said he had blood cancer. So he told me about his cancer. And
when was that, Holly?
That was just kind of, I guess, January, would it have been? Or February? Yeah, January, February. So
yeah,
we were kind of talking about COVID, I think, then, but none of us really knew what was around the corner. And yeah, I had just moved in on New Year's Day to my new place, like living on my own. But I would always be very much like coming home every Sunday for a roast, randomly arriving on a Wednesday, just being like needy to my parents. And me and my mum are so close, and I am with my dad as well. But like, I just love always being with them. Mm. So dad was like, I'm going to fully cocoon now because I'm just kind of scared of all this. So yeah. I went back to the house and then we went into full lockdown, and I remember being like, I'm literally, the house wasn't even fully furnished or anything. I just kind of had a few bits of furniture and I didn't know anyone on my street. And I was like, oh my God, what? Because some of my friends were saying, you know, they were doing their research and they're like, this couldn't be a few months. Like this might be a 6 month thing. You know, obviously they were trying to keep us calm on the news in parts, but I think I kind of understood that, like, I didn't want to believe it, but I knew it was going to go on longer than we all thought. I was afraid of that. So that was probably the hardest part, because, you know, none of us really knew what to do. Like, we all know now how to keep ourselves safe with hand sanitizer and masks. And we kind of, it's like, it's just normal to walk into a shop now and pop a mask on. But like stuff like that at the time.
But you're right. The fear yeah, back in March, it was the unknown.
It was, yeah.
It was the thing that had, you know, because we'd been hearing about Wuhan, and the next thing it was on our shores, and it was like, what is this going to mean?
It was
really scary.
It was scary. And also then to know that my dad was so unwell, I felt like I can't go to their house and I can't go out to Tesco, do my food shop, go to Centre, get some bits, come in and see my mum and dad. Like, it's not safe.
Yeah.
So I really stayed on my own. And then it was just weird. Like, it was just, everyone was just so confused and scared and uncertain. Anything around uncertainty, I really struggle with. I love like a calendar, a plan, you know.
Yeah,
and I was gradually crossing jobs off, being like, that's been cancelled, that's been cancelled, that trip's been cancelled, this person isn't coming to Dublin anymore. You know,
totally,
that way.
Yeah.
So we were all there when you were just kind of left with this blank. And it was different for everyone's career, but like, kind of just, it was up to me. I didn't have anyone saying, you have to get up tomorrow, or you have to, you know, not have a glass of wine tonight or anything like that. So I kind of at the start was like, this is all right. Like, I can do bits and stuff and keep myself going. And in fairness, like, the work was coming because people were like doing makeup demos at home and skincare demos and all that kind of stuff. But I felt like I was going on Instagram and I was like, if I see one more person meditating, making banana bread or doing all this stuff, like, I felt like everyone was coping so much better than me. And I was like, how are people doing these home workouts and, like, you know, getting the motivation? But then I kind of fell in the trap of trying to do that. And so I was like, even though some days I was genuinely doing home workouts, but I could put up a picture of my workout mat and be like, yeah, this is great, and then lie in it and have a glass of wine. Who's gonna know? So then I was kind of like, you know, that made me go, maybe other people are just feeling this pressure to act like they're fine too.
Maybe it's not what it seems.
And gradually I saw people come on and they were starting to look more tired and on their stories and saying, you know, I'm actually not coping. And as much as I wanted everyone to get through it, it made me feel a little bit more, you know, a little bit better that other people were being honest. Because there's this, I think a lot of people rely, they get their self-worth from being busy, and a lot of people love keeping up that appearance online. So when you're used to traveling and being busy and going to events and all that kind of stuff, and suddenly that's your job, is kind of, you know, not possible. I think people were going in overdrive with how productive they could be. But then I think a lot of people were saying, you know, this lockdown is not a productivity competition. You don't have to learn a new language. You don't have to clear out your closet. You just have to get through it.
Yeah. And survival.
That was the most reassuring thing I ever saw. And I was like, you know what? Like, things are bad enough without me turning on myself and beating myself up on top of all this.
Yeah.
So then I think kind of the turning point for me was April, when I got my dog Max, because I've grown up with dogs my whole life and I'm a Dogs Trust ambassador for 10 years. And I was just saying to my parents, like, I think I'm going to foster a dog for a while. And they were like, you're definitely going to end up adopting him, you know.
So at this point, are your parents still in Ireland?
Oh, they moved. Sorry, I left that big chunk out. They moved to France in May.
Okay.
So they were really gone. But like, the thing is, I was happy for them to be there because I know that's like where my dad's at his happiest. The French were taking it so seriously. They had curfews, and if you're out driving around, you were fined on the spot. So it was very, very serious over there. But I kind of like, we had an emotional goodbye, but I was like, we'll be over at Christmas, so it's fine.
Okay.
And then at Christmas, the flights would have meant we'd have to go Dublin to London. We'd have had to do all these stops. And I was like, how can we go through all these airports when dad's not vaccinated and arrive and give him a hug?
Yeah.
Do you know, and be around him for a week. I was like, we can't. So we had this emotional like FaceTime with the four of us. And mum had already, I was vegetarian at the time. I only lasted like a year. But mum had been freezing all this vegetarian stuffing and like getting all the bits ready and, you know, making up, setting up my room in France. And she was so excited. And I actually was the one who called it. I was like, we can't do this. And she just started bawling, crying. And then my auntie June took me and Ben. No, she took me and Ben went to his girlfriend's. Because
Ben is your brother.
Yeah, sorry, Ben's my brother. And I was with my cousins and stuff. But my cousin Laura was actually working in ICU in London. So I took her seat at the table and then we were all FaceTiming and mum and dad were in France. It was the weirdest Christmas I've ever had. But I was so grateful that my aunt and uncle took me in and I had my cousins. But I just remember on Stephen's Day, I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to go home. Mm-hmm. Even though they were like, stay, no, it's fine. But I kind of, even though they're my family, I was like, I want you guys to have your family time too. And they were obviously like, stay. But I went home and I was just in the house on my own on Stephen's Day. And I just got a bottle of wine and I was like, this is grim. Even though I knew there was people worse off. But it's just, that's the day where we'd all wear onesies in my house. We'd watch Christmas movies. We'd eat about like 50 selection boxes and just be cozy with the fire and the dogs. And I think that just made me appreciate that more. I think next Christmas, please God, like we're all just going to appreciate it so much more.
Yeah. So you haven't seen your folks since last May.
Yeah. So I think, yeah, it'll be a year now.
A year.
And when you think I saw them every week, it's just very strange. And they haven't really given us, France is still on the red list, I think, but things keep changing. So my brother tried to book flights for the end of June and then they all got cancelled. And I'm hoping that it's July, but they are moving home in September. But I would really like to get over to them. But it's just, I've kind of got better at going, like the amount of times we've tried to plan things in the last 14 months and they haven't happened. So I've kind of gotten better at going, look, just see what happens.
Yeah, yeah. And how's your dad doing now?
He's actually much better. It's like really stable. He looks great. He's gained a bit of weight back and everything like that. So I think in terms of where he's at, he just needs to take a nap every day, which he never had to do before.
Yeah.
But he's being very wise about it. Like he's not trying to fight it and being proud and saying, I'm a man, I don't need to have a nap. He's like, I'm off for my nap, I'll be back. So he's looking after himself, which is great. And like he knew something was wrong with him and he went to the doctor. And I think there's so many people who, we have this Irish mentality, like I'm grand, I don't want to cause a fuss. And I always think like I really respect him for going, something's not right, I'm going to the doctor. Because anyone who's ever had any illness, that's the one thing they tell you is like, just if you know something's wrong, go to the doctor. And it sounds simple, but we are used to our lives being so fast paced that a lot of the times we don't stop and check in.
Yeah, absolutely. So like, I'm just imagining like this time last year, away from your folks, you didn't know at that time how long it would be. You were hoping to see them at Christmas. Then you get Max, but you have just moved in relatively only. You're only a few months in your new home. And despite having Max, you still have your good days and your bad days. And you've been really open about speaking about your struggles with your own mental well-being.
Yeah, I think that's, like I said earlier, the age that I found was the turning point for me was when I turned 24. And I was so down on myself back then. And I was on antidepressants. I was like doing a job I hated, like not feeling happy with my body. And I just, that's when I started to feel all that again, was around that time. And I rang my doctor and she was like, if you want to go back on the antidepressants, if you think it's going to help, then, you know, definitely do. So I went back on those and just was trying to get through lockdown. But I think everyone, when you don't have your family around you, you're in a new environment, you can't see your friends, you're not doing the work that you can possibly do or traveling, or I felt like I'd lost a big chunk of myself. And I think a lot of people felt that in lockdown, because you're like, who am I? What am I doing? I kind of just felt like I was.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
In autopilot, just existing in the house on my own with my ring light and doing my work bits and not really seeing that many people. So yeah, that was tough. I actually really feel like when I look back at this time last year, I'm just so much happier now, and like I'm really glad. And I think that it's probably made a lot of us stronger to
see,
you know, and just to stop and like really appreciate things as they come again, like being able to, when we can sit inside a coffee shop and order a cup of tea with our friend, or when we can actually, you know, just feel like we can make a plan with people and it'll happen, you know. But definitely, yeah, that was a dark time. And I remember I did a big interview about it, and I think a lot of people were surprised because I just randomly tweeted off the cuff one day how I was feeling, and it got a huge response. And I think that
Do you mind, can you remember the tweet?
Yeah, I think I had like posted a really smiley picture that my friend Ronan took of me, and I was glad I met him. He's my neighbour. So me and Ronan had started to go for walks, and I'd started to open up with him. And I'd been bawling, crying. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I actually haven't posted anything in ages. Will you take a picture of me? I put my sunnies on and I smiled at my coffee cup. And then afterwards, I was looking at the picture and I was like, oh my God, like if you looked at that, like I'm in a cute outfit, my skin was glowing, my hair was nice,
sure.
But like I had my glasses on because I'd been crying. So I just tweeted, like, you'd never really know looking at a picture how someone's really feeling. Like I only wore these because I was so upset today and really just feel so down. And it was like, usually I can sometimes go through times where I feel like I analyze my tweets and the amount I've deleted, going, oh God, I don't know if that's going to offend someone. You know the way things are now sometimes, but I just tweeted it and lots of people got onto me, and relatives were texting me, journalists were texting me. And I just remember I turned off my phone because I was like, oh my God, I felt like I was just so honest there. But then
you were so honest, but you also spoke not just to so many people, but for so many people, I think, when you did that, because how many, not just women, but men as well, or boys or girls or whatever, were feeling the way you were feeling, but maybe didn't have the bravery to do what you did.
Yeah.
But you gave them a voice. And even though obviously life is coming back, which is great, and, you know, there is major light at the end of the tunnel and the vaccinations and all the rest, we're still going to feel like the after effects of this for some time.
That's what worries me. And it's not something like I enjoy thinking about too much in a sense, but I'm also like, we are here and things are opening up, but I still don't know when I'm going to see my mum and dad. And I also feel like I have a lot of friends who are in the entertainment industry, the restaurant industry, or the beauty industry, and they're not going to open the door and everything's going to bounce back. Like, it's a slog for people.
Yeah.
And there's going to be, sadly, a lot of people who will struggle to open their doors again. And, you know, that kind of thing scares me a lot. But I think that we have to take all the small wins as we go along. But I think we're all just afraid. I don't think they can possibly put us into lockdown again.
I don't
think people will go for it. Like, I don't think people can take it, you know?
No.
And I think for me to be like 29 and, you know, I don't have kids, I don't have all that. Like, I remember seeing a woman standing outside a playground that was locked and her two toddlers were screaming to get in. They were so angry and upset about why they couldn't go in. And I was like, that is horrific. Like, you know, So there were so many moments where I was like, I am actually so lucky to only have to look after myself and worry about myself. But it's been an absolute roller coaster. Like, and I do love when people are honest about it. And I, like, you know, if someone starts telling me about a mental breakdown they had during lockdown, I really appreciate it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because we feel less alone when we hear that.
Mm-hmm.
So you're dating Jamie now.
Yeah.
And all is going well. But before you guys started going out, you were single. Were you mingling online, or what was that like for you?
I was mingling. But say, I mean, at a social distance, sort of. Yeah. I was wearing masks the whole time.
Yeah, because how do you date in a pandemic?
I know. Well, I'm lucky in Stony Batter. There's so many young people that all drink outside on the streets.
Okay, yeah.
So like when the sun came out, everyone was just out like, oh, we just have a glass of rosé, and people would put a chair out the front of the house. And then one time me and my friend Ronan were in my garden, which is like the size of the table. It's tiny. But he could hear a group of girls on one of the roofs behind us. And he's like, I think that's my friend Megan. And he rang her and her phone started ringing and she was like, hello. So then we were like, where are you? Can we come? So now I made all these friends like through Ronan. So it's been really nice. And Great. Then I did meet a few people through them, and I kind of was on the apps and I went on a few dates, like, you know, but I just wasn't that into anyone. And I also felt like I was kind of just trying to, like, I was kind of like, why didn't I know this was coming? I would have gotten into a relationship before. So I was kind of trying to just make things work that weren't for me. So, then I was just like, do you know what? And it's weird because I always like, I'm really strict with my friends who, no matter how long they've been single, I hate when girls are like, all men are dicks, like, you know I don't care, like, blah, blah. And I'm like, first of all, you do care, you want to fall in love and you want to find someone that makes you happy. Secondly, no, not all men are dicks, do you know? And like, I think I grew up with a dad that was so loving and supportive and stable and, you know, just amazing. My brother's amazing, so to grow up, I'm so lucky to grow up with the two of them. That always gave me a sense of like
hope.
And like, my mum and dad fell in love on a whim and got engaged 3 weeks later.
Really love
3 weeks later, and they're married like 30 years or something. So I've always had this kind of, not a Disney view of it, because I can be kind of cutthroat when it comes to dating. If I just randomly stop liking someone, then I can't check back in.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
But then, yeah, I was on the apps. And,
but you do believe in love and romance, yeah, exactly. And that it can happen. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you have to keep your standards high. And that's not about what they drive or what they do. That's just about what you want from someone. And sure. I really think it has to be 50-50 in what you put in with any kind of friendship. Or, I think because I'm a Libra, I hate when things are unfair. So if I feel like I'm in a one-sided friendship and I'm like, you know what, I'm always like remembering her birthday or doing this for her or letting her talk about things for an hour on the phone, but she's not asking me how I am, that's when I start to feel uncomfortable. But that's why I think in relationships it's so important to be balanced. But anyway, long story short, me and Jamie matched online at the end of September, and we were just talking for a while, and then he asked me out, but we were able to go out for a 9 euro meal at that time.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so we had a short window where the bars were still open, and so we went out for dinner and drinks, and yeah, then we kind of started doing more like outdoor wholesome dates, which I hadn't really done before, so it was nice to see nature.
Yeah. Do you know what, am I right in thinking, I mean, it does sound challenging, but in some ways, is it a positive, as in, you know, you don't have this pressure because you're meant to keep your distance?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's funny because obviously the first date we had a few drinks and stuff, but then the second one's like we were just out and about, and also I was slightly mental at the time as well, and I don't know, I think I had no filter. And I was in gym gear with barely any makeup walking through the woods, so it's like the most kind of natural version of myself he could have met. And I didn't have the pretenses of like, oh, I have this job next week and then I'm going to London, and you know, the kind of stuff you might have thought was cool, but it was just me.
Oh, that's much better.
Yeah. And
because you're really coming to the table as yourself rather than putting your best foot forward.
Exactly. And I think the most kind of, I remember my friend Jack had moved in for a few weeks, and I think trying to live with a friend for during the pandemic, it just didn't go well. And I think that was when I just like had a proper, just like, I didn't know Jamie that long. I burst out crying in front of him on Sandy Main Strand, and I was just like, I just feel like, and I just went on this kind of rant, and he just like listened to me, which is great at the start, because you know, sometimes you feel like you're not being listened to in relationships.
Yeah, yeah.
And he just gave me a hug and a kiss in the head, and he was like, it's gonna be okay. And I was like, yeah, actually, he kind of just calmed me in that second.
Yeah.
And after he said that, even though he didn't say anything like outrageously wise, it just made me so calm. And I was like, oh my God, yeah, it actually is. In the grand scheme of things, everything will be fine. So I think that it was definitely the most kind of stripped back version of me that's ever gone into a relationship. And I think that's why we kind of got to know each other so quickly.
Yeah. Well, that's, I'm not exactly planning the hat or anything, but I'm excited because I think that's a really healthy place to begin a relationship.
Yeah.
You know, because I think we've probably, a lot of us have been there before, where we try to, you know, kind of portray this perfect idea. This is the perfect me. And then inevitably, as a relationship goes on, you really get to know what the person is like.
Yeah.
But it's far healthier if you're starting off as, this is the me you'll get to know a few weeks and months down the road. So this is me from the beginning.
I know, exactly. Like, so I couldn't believe it the way it went. And I don't know, I just, it was a real turning point for me, and I never want to put all my happiness in anyone's hands.
Sure.
I know that I'll be always fine on my own no matter what happens, but it's so nice to be able to have someone to share all this with and the highs and lows, and to feel like you're kind of in a bit of a team and just kind of have someone. Because I think that period where I was really alone for that part of the pandemic, and in fairness, I was kind of single on and off for like 6 years. Mm. I wasn't in any serious relationships for that time. So it was kind of all very new to me, but it definitely gave us this weird little time where we weren't out for dinners all the time. We weren't thrown into our friends' groups. We didn't have the pressure to do all these cool dates. Like, we just kind of had real quality time together. So that was nice. Yeah. And then obviously he's from Cork. So he was in Cork for Christmas. So we managed to we went away for New Year's, even though the travel ban came out on New Year's Day and we were still in the place. So it was actually grand. No one said anything. We just drove home the next day.
Yeah.
Didn't kill anyone.
Yeah. No, I think that was a situation for a lot of people as well at the time. Something you said to me that I absolutely loved, because we hear a lot about setting goals, setting intentions, having plans, and it's important to look ahead. And while there's a time and a place for that, you said that you're not really a 5-year plan kind of gal.
Yeah.
No. I'd love to talk about this.
Yeah, I've never been that way. And I think I have had friends over the years who have been so strict with themselves of like thinking, no, I have to get the ring by this age, the big wedding, have my first baby by this age. And I think weirdly, a lot of them, the pressure was coming from their mums and stuff, but it was also coming just from their friend groups. And I don't know, I was always like, why? I used to always just say, why though? Like, what happens if you meet him at 35 instead of 25? Do you want to just pick some randomer at 25 because you feel like that's the year you're supposed to? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So I was like, what is this mad rush? I was like, do you think lads sit around panicking about when they're going to propose to someone? They don't give a shit.
No.
So like, I know that there's a biological clock and all of that kind of thing comes into it. And, you know, women, you know, you can set goals and have aspirations, but I think it's just so much pressure. Because what do you do if you're 2 years into your 5-year plan and you're not where you wanted to be? You know, you're only going to set yourself up for anxiety. And I think that like when you start to get desperate, I know this sounds bad, but like men can smell desperation off women. If you're out there trying find a man, they're like, oh Jesus, here she comes. Like, they know. So I think,
and it's a big turnoff.
Yeah, it's a big turnoff. And I think that like you just have to try and chill. So I feel bad. It's not something, if I ever did have a daughter, it's not something I'd ever want her to feel that kind of pressure. And I think whenever I get messages on Instagram, it's girls going, you know, I just haven't met anyone and a lot of my friends are getting engaged and, you know, I'm 27. I'm like, you're 27. Like, you're still so young.
So young.
But a big thing I've noticed, and that's something I'd like to work on in the future, is that like a lot of girls who are in a friend group where a lot of their friends are getting engaged or having babies or saving for a mortgage or whatever, and they're not there yet, they start to feel left at the side. And there's all these girls that have reached out to me that are like, you know, they don't want to go out with me anymore. I don't have anyone to be my wing woman. You know, I don't know how to meet new people. So it's kind of, I think if you are really happy in a relationship and you're in love and everything, don't forget about your single friends. You know, definitely still arrange to go for dinner with them, still include them at dinner parties, you know, when we can, and that kind of thing. Because you kind of, how else are they supposed to meet someone or have someone? It's not like you can just be with your single friends when you're single and then you're like, bye. And that definitely seems to happen. But I do feel for a lot of girls or women as well that are just, you know, living in a more remote part of Ireland during the pandemic, and they do have that pressure on themselves and they've just feel like the last year has been wasted.
Yeah.
So it's tough. Like, it definitely is. And I'm not saying this as like, oh, I'm so smug now that I have a boyfriend. This was genuinely always how I thought.
Yeah.
Like, I did enjoy aspects of being single too. And that's one thing, because I don't know why, but people always come to me for relationship advice in Instagram when they've just been broken up with. And even though I'm not single anymore, but they're like, I don't know what to do now. And all that. And I'm like, you need to enjoy this window where you can do your self-care, your baths, you can read, you can hang out with your friends, you can not shave your legs if you don't, like, you can just, you know, not that you can't have hairy legs if you're in a relationship, but you know, I just kind of think it's important to have that window, and that's a really shaping time for,
completely agree.
Isn't it? Sometimes when I would get to a point where it was getting kind of serious with someone, if I wasn't 100% into it, I was like, I have actually too much to sacrifice because I love being on my own. Do I really want to commit to this if it's not what I really want? So that's why I was like, nah, bye.
So in terms of self-care, you've already touched on things throughout the chat, but I know you're a big fan of, you know, minding yourself, facials, you know, nice treatments. I've heard you speak before about lighting candles, incense, and just having your home lovely. But also we see you going for a dip in the sea. So that's a big thing.
Yeah. I know. I was actually in the sea this morning.
Oh, were you? Brilliant.
I was, but it was very cold. And it's funny because it's not something I actually wake up like, oh my God, I can't wait to get in the sea.
Yeah, okay.
I'm just like driving along being like, Jesus, am I actually doing this for the whole drive? And then I get in and it just completely, it gives you that rush and the adrenaline thing. And I think at the moment, because we're not able to like go to a mad nightclub or lift heavy in the gym, you kind of miss that adrenaline. Yeah. So like I kind of jumped in. It was nice. And my boyfriend was like, she only went up into like here. I did the dunk. But it definitely, I do enjoy it. But like,
so it's beforehand you dread it, but then afterwards you feel brilliant.
Yeah, I feel so.
Yeah, it is great.
Because
isn't it?
I was afraid of my swimming teacher growing up. She was really scary. So I tried to stay in the shallow end for as long as I could, even though I was so much taller than the other kids.
Yeah.
And because he was a really nice teacher in the shallow end. And I was like, no, honestly, my mum was scarlet because I was just there with like lanky. So eventually I went to the deep end and I just was so scared of her. So I'm a little bit nervous in the sea. And
yeah, okay.
If my feet slip off the ground, I can't feel the ground, I just have this weird panic that I'm going to sink. Mm-hmm. So for me, that sounds mad, but when I get out, I'm so proud of myself because I've done something I'm afraid of.
Yeah.
That's how I've started my day. So like, it's not something I do every day, but probably now every week, at least once. I'll do it now that it's nicer out. But like you said, I think if you were to ask me when am I at my absolute happiest, it would be the house is like dimly lit, candles, incense. I've just exfoliated my entire body. I'm in a dressing gown, like headband, face mask, little cooling pads under my eyes, painting my nails, watching. I just finished Desperate Housewives, but I was re-watching it with Max on my lap. And I'm just so content in that moment. Like,
yeah.
And I think that it's just such a nice, because you're doing it for yourself and it's just really proper self-care. And obviously now I went for my first facial yesterday, which was brilliant to be able to go back and do it. But I do also think that I've enjoyed doing it all myself.
Yeah, it's surprising how much we can do ourselves.
I know,
at home.
Yeah, tinting your brows, doing everything.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Last question. What has been your biggest learning of this time or lesson that you've learned?
I think for me, and I was only thinking about this in the car, I was like, I actually think that we all only have so much energy, I think, every day. And I never realized how important it was what you choose to give your energy to. And I think I'm not friends with the same people I was friends with that started this. Like, as in, I am with some of them, but some of my friendships definitely suffered. And there's people I haven't really been speaking to since this started because we kind of fell out or we had different approaches to this or, you know. So I kind of actually think that this has taught me that it's who you surround yourself with is so important.
Yeah.
And I think I relied on that more because I didn't have my parents to lean on. So I was like, oh no, I really have to be careful who I'm around, because if I'm with someone who makes me anxious, or if I have a friend that's kind of always kind of getting sly digs in, or you know, when you're with people, you feel like you have to watch what you're saying. So I've probably kept my circle really small, and I'm with people who take me fully as I am, and I can just relax with them and know that they support me and I support them. So I think I just look for quality over quantity with everything now.
Yeah, well, that just goes back to what we started the conversation with, which is just being fully yourself. So I think if anyone listening, I mean, there's so much that we can probably learn from you, but I would have personally loved to have heard this conversation when I was in my 20s. I think I would have taken so much from it, you know. Shoulda, woulda, coulda. Anyway, I will put it in a time capsule and go back in time and present it to my 29-year-old self.
And warn us all about the pandemic while you're there.
God, be like, what? All joking aside, I think that's a great message, to just be yourself. And if you struggle with it, because there are plenty of people that really struggle, and I was one of those. The more you lean into it and the more you listen, as you said, a counsellor said to you once, like, every time you say yes to something you don't want to do, you're saying no to Holly, you're saying no to yourself. So it's a really good reminder to just do what's right for you, because ultimately, if you do, it'll be the right thing for your life and for those around you, I feel.
Definitely, because you'd be begrudgingly doing things, and that's, you know, not right either. Yeah.
Thank you,
Holly. I could stay and chat for hours.
Yeah, me too. It's been so lovely. As I said to you a million times, I've been a fan of yours. So I this chat did not disappoint. So thank you, and the very best luck with everything.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
If you like this podcast, please show your support by leaving a rating or a little comment on Apple, or by clicking follow on Spotify. I'd be so grateful. You've been listening to Ready to Be Real Conversations.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.